here we are. This is Sex, Love, Psychedelics, and I'm your host, Dr. Kat, bringing you psychosexual conversations that will leave you intellectually turned on and hungry for more.
Hey, lovers. You've heard me talk about how important psychedelics were as a role in my own personal growth and healing. And I cannot express enough how this was only a tool, and there's no way I would have had the lasting changes and the self-understanding if I didn't also pair this with therapy and all the tools that came with therapy. So we can hide in the illusion of conviction and certainty that comes with altered psychedelic states. It's like, I know the truth, truth with the capital T. I got this. I know the way, I feel one, whatever. And I also strongly believe that we can create new reference points and help us to repattern old beliefs with new ideas. Like, let me put this out there. You know, there's space for both of these. And we can also revert back to old ways of coping if we don't have continued tools and ways of supporting this with new way of being. New ways of being like communication or self-regulation tools or self-introspection tools or, you know, even the contemplation and understanding of identity. Like, that doesn't go away, the need for these tools, just because we learn some universal truth. We're also really vulnerable and raw on the other side of new perspectives or letting go of old coping strategies that we've had and that we've used, you know, since the dawn of time, of our time, and how important it is to have the safe structure of a good therapist, you know, and what that provides us and the education around that and the processing, the continuing to integrate what it is that we learned in that space. And that's what we're getting into today. This conversation is not only going to help you to get to know what type of structure you need to support yourself in this process, but also to get to know better discernment to find the right guides for yourself. You know, what is their process in supporting and holding you through this experience? So this summer, I was invited into the Mind Valley community, and I got to know some incredible leaders in the fields of self-development, AI, healing, entertainment, and so much more. And I met these two delightful humans who are taking on the very big task of creating legal retreats for psilocybin and ayahuasca. They believe in the importance of preparation and integration around these deep journeys like this. And I do too. Like, this is something you hear me say over and over and over again. The prep and the integration is just as important as this journey, if not even more important, truly. I really enjoy dropping in with Austin Mao and Choo Choo, and I'm so stoked to share our conversation with you. And before we get to Austin and Choo Choo, if you're needing support in vetting your practitioners for psychedelics, maybe you don't know what to ask or what to look for. Hopefully this talk inspires you. And if you need more support, I've created a guide for you. So the link in the show notes gives you access to that guide. So you don't have to guess in the dark. Take your time. This is an important process to vet, and be safe out there. Now to my awesome guests that I'm so excited to dive in on, Austin Mao and Choo Choo, who are both psychedelic facilitators and founders of Ceremonia, a legal psilocybin and ayahuasca nonprofit retreat center in Colorado. Thanks, guys, so much for joining me today.
Thank you for inviting us.
So happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm stoked to have you on. I've been wanting to have this conversation since I met you. So Austin and Choo Choo, I met them at the latest trip to Estonia for the Mind Valley Conference this July, and they are just delightful humans who are full of childlike play and fun and just awe. And I'm so excited to have you on here to join me as a couple and really dive into even the uniqueness of your chemistry and what you bring and how that contributes to the sessions that you bring.
Thank you for the beautiful intro. I just remembered that when I recognized you, wow, I was like, this is a very unique cat and we need to connect.
Yeah, I think we instantly dropped into like both intellectual IFS conversations and playful giggles. We're like jumping around. Yeah. And when we were first dropping in about the work that you do, the ceremonia, I was like, how is this even legal? Like, many listeners on here might be curious about the safety and the legality aspects of participating in such retreats, you know, retreats like psilocybin or ayahuasca. So how do you navigate these challenges and what precautions do you take to ensure the safety and the legality of these experiences for your participants?
It's a great question. And thank you for asking it. Before founding Ceremonia, we worked in a retreat center and an ayahuasca retreat in Costa Rica. Mm. And it was really important to us to bring something to the United States. Ceremonia is a psychedelic church. So we're both nonprofit and a church. And the psilocybin and ayahuasca are sacraments for our church. Mm. So very much like how the Catholic Church can serve wine to its people, even under 18, we are serving psilocybin and ayahuasca in communion as to greater access to divinity, which we believe comes from within oneself and connects us to divinity in all things.
Right? Okay. So how does that, is that just in Colorado? Because I know you guys are based in Colorado. Is that just there? Is that across the United States? What does that look like?
What's great about Colorado, and it's actually the reason why we moved here in the first place, is that Colorado is leading the charge in legalization. Mm-hmm. So right now, psilocybin and DMT, which is the active psychotropic in ayahuasca, is decriminalized in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And there are measures to make it fully legal in the state in 2024 and onwards, which we will, of course, be going towards.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a federal level exemption through the Religious Rights Act. And at the state level, we also have a level of protection through the decriminalization.
Yeah. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And truthfully, like I think of nonprofits and this is a massive undertaking, especially given the culture is really new around psychedelics legalization and everything. So what's been probably the most rewarding aspect of stepping into the space and taking on that big responsibility like that?
Big reward.
Yeah.
I'd say the most. So we've guided 111 alumni in the past year, and 96% say it's the most transformative experience of their lives. The reward is that there's this moment where it's like an aha that we get to be part of, that we get to witness and experience with these people, that they get to experience the incredible beauty of life. That no matter if they were a high-performing CEO or a combat veteran with PTSD, that is such a precious gift to be able to be a part of, to be able to be in service to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our original intention is this changed our life and we went a lot of twists and turns to actually find a safe way to engage this medicine and have it really empower and transform our life with a proper integration. And that's why we wanted to share this with other people. And I think the most reward for me is like now that my life is also my study. And it's also my service. And I get to see people, you know, coming from like the most reward. There's so many examples of people have been taking antidepressants for decades. And then after going through our program, and they were able to be free and feel like they can be free from all the labels that they gave to them for so many years. And so many cases like that, it just feels like, wow, this life is so worth it and so beautiful. Mm-hmm. I'll choose this again and again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would say the same thing as a therapist and facilitator. You know, I think it's important to also talk about in what aspect do we get back? You know, what parts of us are met in these experiences? Because there is something that's so intoxicating about somebody watching somebody have an aha moment or go through a revelation. It's like,
peering into this very vulnerable space that's only allowed for some people to be able to witness happen in that exact moment, the glitter that happens in that moment. So to be able to hear how that's been for you. Is it different when you work with CEOs or somebody who is, general population or war veterans? Like, what does that process look like? Or what's the difference of what you've noticed?
Interestingly, you know, we have specialized and focused on sort of high performing change makers, executives, founders, yeah, for quite some time. And we also take in artists and creators and veterans, et cetera.
Mental health professionals.
We facilitate a lot of therapists and facilitators and even shamans. And what's interesting about this is that there is a humanizing factor to this work, right? That as soon as you step in the door, you're able to shed the suit of your identity and approach that with curiosity, you know, because a lot of the times, I would say 100% of the times, we wear those identities as protectors for us to, protecting us from being with the true essence of ourselves, right? Our true inner power.
Yeah. Or what we are protecting is those vulnerable parts of ourselves, those inner child that used to carry burdens, and a different protector that is different from our identity. If I am a high achiever, then those achievements can be my protector. If I'm for someone who has a mental health for many years, those, for example, depression is a strong protector. The content of the protection is different as different identity, whatever, but the process of removing those protectors are the same.
And what does that look like for working with the two of you? Because I know that, and your team, because I know many people go into ceremonies and they just go for the ceremony itself. They go to experience the medicine. And I know that that's how I started. I went to a ceremony, had the experience, and then I went back on the other side, back into my everyday life, which I wish that I had had more support. I fortunately had a therapist. Unfortunately, my therapist was not familiar with psychedelics and they had their own bias. However, there was an element of being able to talk about some of the symbolism that came up for me, because otherwise I wouldn't quite know what to do with all that information. It's a lot of information that you get hit with at the same time. So can you elaborate on the importance of the process that you take people through?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So, you know, 12% of America uses a psychedelic every year. That's a crazy number. And before I used a psychedelic ayahuasca in a intentional setting, I had already been through Burning Man 8 years and done psychedelics 100+ times. So I went in with a chip on my shoulder thinking, okay, what could this teach me? Mm-hmm. And as I'm sure that in your story, in your reflection, you experienced doing it in an intentional setting, going inwards with that sacrament is so much more powerful of an experience, right?
Yeah.
But, and I think Chuchu and I really, we both shared this, for years we did this just with the medicine, just with the psychedelic. And then we discovered that we were spiritually bypassing, right?
Yeah, I actually, I went to the ayahuasca retreat that I was working with, you know, every 3 months, and my life is getting worse and worse. Because I was feeling like depressed a lot of times. It feels like my life just hit by the train and I don't know how to bring it back on track. Like, I have some knowing from my medicine ceremony, but then my life structure doesn't really support me to integrate those change. And I generate more guilt and more blame to myself for not living my truth and getting into like the patterns of my avoiding stuff. And it was like a downward spiral. And I think through finding actually internal family system that I was able to like bring myself back to the ground, and then realizing, wow, this work needs so much preparation to prepare us to have the outer safety, which is the setting, and also our the an inner safety, to have all the safety, then we can really go deep and without, you know, shoot to the cosmos and being have alien do surgery on us, all those like, and we can actually have a potent journey that is really related to ourselves that actually can bring us closer to whatever we call divine or truth. And then after the process, the journey, you know, we will have breakthrough there this way or that way, but the integration is so important. And when we look at the traditional ceremony, like a lot of people like to let me go to the source, go to the jungle, mm-hmm. but the difference is they are born in that environment, they have living in that tradition for like so many generations. That is their lifestyle. They don't need to prepare. They don't need to integrate. That's just how they live their life.
But they don't come home to Zoom calls.
Yeah. But yeah. For us, our modern life, our society, our value, how our environment, you know, environment is what we have and that supports our, what we do, our commitment and supports how we be, like our values, it's completely different. So we really need the bridge of preparation and the focus on integration. I often tell all my participants the integration is more important and harder work than coming totally. To the ceremony. Yeah.
Yeah. I like to use this metaphor of a map, a compass, and a flashlight. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. the psychedelic experience can shine a flashlight on what's possible.
Yeah.
We're often able to experience levels of catharsis, of spiritual connection, of depth, of knowing ourselves that we've never experienced before. Right. And that possibility is really eye-opening because like, wow, I can experience that. Now I have something to aim towards.
Yeah.
The feeling in our bodies, like the feeling of openness, the feeling of warmth, the feeling of expansion, this is the compass, right? We can orient ourselves to that feeling of great joy, of great peace, of great harmony within. Mm-hmm. But psychology and psychotherapy provides a map. It provides us a map that says, hey, if you are feeling this thing, here are some tools of inquiry so that you can maybe go and discover what's underneath that thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can get to enlightenment with just a flashlight or just a compass or just a map, but it's so much more effective and so much less suffering to have all three.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That brings up a really good point, especially as you're considering the comparison between a culture that lives this way. They live ritual. They live in introspection and reflection and symbolism. They live in mythology. And then we look at our life and there's such a lack of mythology. There's a lack of introspection. And I remember sitting in ceremony, ayahuasca ceremony, and being next to this woman I became friends with and hearing about how much she was suffering. She had no skills of introspection. She had no, she'd never really sat with herself. And it was so painful for her to go inside and be overwhelmed with all these thoughts. And and it made me wonder how this is such a reverent experience to hold for people, and how are we holding the responsibility with reverence of how are we supporting people in being able to go into that space? So I'm hearing, I love what you said, Chuchu, the importance of the preparation is what guides or holds safety for individuals going to that space.
Yeah. You know, the ayahuasca in particular is held in a shamanistic context, right? Mm-hmm.
And what does that mean? Can you explain to our listeners?
Yeah. Well, first I'll explain it in sort of a layman's way and then mm-hmm. maybe in a more complex way. In a layman's way, there's the polarities of maybe medical versus shamanistic, right? Mm-hmm. Medical, you can imagine going to a ketamine clinic. There are white walls. You get an IV drip and someone in a nurse's outfit is serving you that, right? And you get that, then you go home.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In a shamanistic context, the image that I can paint is like you're in the jungle, you're lying on a mat down there. They're blowing smoke and waving feathers and chanting. You know, it's very, very, very different context to work with psychedelics, right? We position ourselves in the middle because there are beautiful things about both sides, right? Yeah. The medical has a high standard of care, but it lacks the spiritual connection and much of the integration. The mm-hmm. shamanistic context has this ancient wisdom and mysticism, but no standard of care. You're rolling the dice on the kind of facilitator or shaman that you get, right? Mm-hmm. Now, in the shamanistic context, they're usually telling you in advance, like, it's the plant, there are plant spirits, you know, the medicine is healed, there's a healing factor to the medicine, you know, trust and surrender, so on and so forth, right? They're kind of painting a picture of what the medicine experience is like. Mm-hmm. In many sense, that is also, it's very similar to a religion, right? It's saying like, here is my belief as a shaman, my belief that I am now about to serve you a psychedelic, which opens you up so mm-hmm. much to whatever is in your mind at that moment, okay? Now, the subtle danger of that is a psychedelic experience is ineffable. It's something that you've never experienced before. And the mind, in seeking safety, will latch onto things that make it easier to experience the deeper parts of ourselves that have been hidden away for so long. And so if a shaman is saying, hey, these are the things that will help you feel safer, aka like, you know, listen to the plant spirits and so on and so forth, the mind can latch onto that and say, ah, it is something out there that is healing me in here, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
I want to add on some how we create safety here in Ceremonia. Like safety and harm reduction is the foundation of all the work we do. And we first, like we introduced people to books that will introduce them how to connect and be aware of their own feelings. And the goal is like to be okay with what it is without needing to change it. And we create a lot of values for us as facilitator in order to create the safety that from us holding that. We have a 13-page of container document to train not just the facilitator, but everybody in the staff team to know how to create a trauma-informed sanctuary with all the mm-hmm. values, guidelines, and every tiny little details.
Yeah.
And that's how we provide altar safety. And also we build a lot of connection among the participants. So in general, we are create a field of love and acceptance because we believe our trauma are created from relationships that gets to heal through relationship. So we're preparing the individual, understand their feeling, be with what is, always checking with them. And we do a lot of like bring us back to the now and check in with the safety very often in our process. And then for us, we do a lot of trauma-informed training. We train our team with the document, and then we provide a group field of connection and love and acceptance to provide that safety.
Yeah. And to even hear the nuance of the attention that you give to these retreats is for me as a trauma therapist and also working with ketamine in a combined sense, I also do bridge work. It's really relieving to me to hear that. I don't think people understand the complexity of holding space for a retreat. And there's so many people who are like, oh, I'm going to do a retreat now. And then I hear the horror stories of what happens and people get hurt or there's not enough facilitators. There's one facilitator to 20 people, or, you know, there's a lack of, they say I'm trauma informed, but they just read about trauma. They didn't actually train with how to hold it. And so it's like, people believe that they're in integrity, but what does that even mean? And so I'm really happy to hear, you know, the steps that you're taking to take care of the nuance of this.
Yeah. And the saddest thing is when us, you know, looking for this kind of like service to improve us, to find healings, like we already, you know, somewhat lacking of awareness of like,
sure.
Not feeling unsafe. And we don't even know, like the beginning of my journey, I don't even know why my life is so challenged after ayahuasca. I was sharing so much gratitude to the retreat, to the facilitators when I came home, I didn't even know what contributed to the non-safety there, then contributed to this like chaos in my life.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And what would you suggest for people who are looking at retreats or even looking at facilitators, working with facilitators? Are there cues that they should look out for? Are there questions that they should ask?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, what is core to our values is this notion of being with what is, right? Mm-hmm. Meaning that whatever you are feeling at that moment, that there is an environment and there's a practice to be okay with feeling that feeling. For example, many people that come here don't have a relationship with anger, right?
Yeah.
But anger, when it's not met and when it's suppressed, bleeds out as resentment, frustration, annoyance, victimization, projection, so on and so forth, right? And so what we see often happens in other retreats or in other practices with psychedelics is the facilitators will say, just choose love, or yeah, just feel grateful, or just be thankful, right?
Give. Love and light, love and light. Yeah.
Or, yeah, exactly. Or just forgive, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Which, to be fair, like, it's how we started.
Yeah.
But what happens is, maybe before we jump to forgiveness and love, maybe we need to actually feel pissed off,
yeah,
first, because we've never allowed ourselves to feel that feeling. Because as a kid, mommy and daddy said, don't be angry, don't cry. And then mm-hmm, we just started to mask our feelings. Mm-hmm. So I think if I were to share like the highest bit of advice on finding a good facilitator is qualify their orientation. Mm-hmm. Is their orientation towards you should be feeling XYZ? Mm-hmm. Okay. That word should is what to watch out for, because yeah, they're effectively saying, and look at their schedule, like the workshops that they do or how they hold the container. You know, is the workshop built around love and light? Mm-hmm. I mean, these are beautiful things to experience, and that's absolutely the end goal. Mm-hmm. But the real path of deep healing, to let our protective parts know it's okay to feel our feelings, mm-hmm, means going through the shadow to get to the light.
Yeah,
yeah, I know. I have so much to say about this. When you're earlier talking about, you know, like facilitator holding one person, holding 20 people, just like that trick used to triggers me. And I went through like a long journey about like accepting this. And I think my number one thing is like, if this person like carries the energy that he knows better than you, he has the power to heal you, he's the shaman or she is the healer, and then I would just immediately feel my body close up. And I have this, my teacher, my spiritual teacher for many years, and how like I learned from him, you know, what I look for from a facilitator or a retreat container is like, are they prioritizing safety first? Is there any like inclusivity, you know, like every feelings or perceptions, are they valued? And, you know, are we all viewed as unique and equal, and all, is there any empathy or validation for my feelings and perceptions? You know, do I have the freedom to choose what feels right, and do I have my sovereignty to decide, do I want to participate this or not? Like, is this everything shared, confidential? Like, are they recording with communication or anything? Like, are we empowered to do more self inquiry and hold our own self awareness? Like, yeah, all those little tiny bits, a lot of them are coming from, you know, we have to have a certain awareness and inner connection to be able to define and discern that. But I think it's really, really important, you know, for us to always question mark and ask our question to the facilitator and test their patience and their love for service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think you bring that up, you know, the closure that happened in your own body. How many of us just bypass these the physical responses as fear or something wrong with us, and we self-blame rather than get curious with, oh, I noticed that just happened. There's a whole intelligence in the body that I think we favor the cognitive over the embodiment. So really listen, like, how do I feel around this facilitator or talking to this facilitator? Yeah. Is it making me feel weird in some way, not to suppress that?
You know, a foolproof way to identify whether a facilitator can hold you is if you challenge the facilitator's beliefs.
Okay. Tell us more, Austin.
A lot of people.
Yeah. Because if they can receive your challenge to their beliefs and not hold their own dogma and receive you in that fullness, then that means that they are likely to allow you to have your own experience maximally, mm-hmm, while supporting you, you know, from the ground up, not mm-hmm, from the top down of like, this is what you need to believe.
Yeah. Yeah. It does. And it allows for this space for, you know, our own innate wisdom to come through versus from outside of us. Yeah. You know, to circle back around to something that we were talking about earlier about spiritual bypassing. And for many of our listeners, they may not know what that is. Can we start with identifying what that is? And then how can somebody determine the difference between when they're bypassing and when they're spiritually bypassing and when they're spiritually growing?
Yeah. So spiritually bypassing, I think it's easiest to think of it in, it's encapsulated in a statement, everything happens for a reason.
Yeah.
Because while it's true that everything happens for a reason, in real time, we don't know what that reason is. Mm. Right. And it's only in retrospect, they're like, oh, that mistake I made or that place that I got hurt that led me to who I am today. Ah, that happened for a reason. Mm-hmm. You can see that in retrospect. But looking at now and looking in the future, we can't see that. But if we're relying on that idea, that notion, what happens is we're often bypassing the actual struggle and suffering that is happening now, right? And the reason why that's important is if we bypass that, we are limiting ourselves from the gift of investigating what's underneath our parts. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, an easy example is what we shared earlier. Like, for example, a group of people we're facilitating, we're talking about like grief and you know, those emotions. And then and we take a break and then and the facilitator just like directly facilitate. Okay, now we're to move to love and to acceptance. And that is like how we are being facilitated to do spiritual bypassing without like fully being attuned with where we are actually at. Or mm-hmm. sometimes, you know, I a lot of Instagram people, they do like manifesting, right? I think that's a really good example for spiritual bypassing. Like when people are not bringing the real work into their manifestation, it's powerful to send our intention to the universe. But when we, you know, just like, this is my intention, this is what I want to manifest, and then just chill out. And that's the total spiritual bypassing. I even think a lot of us, including myself, sometimes even getting to the bypassing of like doing the work, you know, the end goal of us doing this, all the healing is, you know, to touch more light, to be more connected with truth or divine, mm-hmm. whatever we call it. And sometimes I just realized I am just being caught in karma. I'm like repeating the same work again and again. I'm not getting anywhere. I'm not actually feel more self energy. I'm not actually getting more free from the suffering. I'm just repeating the thing. And because that doing the work gives me a juice of like, I am, you know, I'm growing, I'm being conscious and spiritual and taking responsibility. That is also a very tricky bypassing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I liken it to the concept of pendulation, mm-hmm. where, you know, we have this goal and we also have where we're at right now. You know, the acceptance of, like you said, these parts of us that are scared, these parts of us that are protecting, these parts of us that just live in scarcity or fear. And then we might do the skills to take care of it. And then we might pendulate back and do the same pattern that we did before. And then we might, you know, move further and do the thing that, you know, that ideally we want to do or believe the ideal situation and then pendulate back. So it's like, how can we hold the paradox of these two things, the part of us that's afraid and the part of us that is love at the same time, the part that trusts, that part that fears.
Totally. I think that, first of all, the pendulation, I think the reason why that's valuable is because we get to experience contrast, mm-hmm. right? And you know, that oft saying, like, you can't know light until you know dark. You can't know, you know, joy until you know pain.
Yeah. Without polarity, this whole world doesn't exist. Just one dot.
And it's true. What I think is, how do I put this? Maybe like another level of work around consciousness is to be able to hold multiple feelings, particularly polarized feelings at the same time, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
We often believe that it's like, oh, I'm in grief and therefore I'm stuck in grief. But if you actually really tune into your body, you can feel grief simultaneous with compassion,
yeah.
with joy, mm-hmm. with love, with anger, mm-hmm. right? And having that somatic awareness, having that capacity to feel more is a really big part of healing and wholeness. Mm-hmm. Because at any given moment, you're probably feeling a lot of things at once.
Yeah.
But it's when we get overwhelmed, our system gets overwhelmed or hyper-focused on one feeling, that we limit ourselves from the full experience of presence, the mm-hmm. full experience of life.
Yeah. Yeah. We're dynamic. We're humans that change from moment to moment. And when we over-identify with that one feeling, it's like we become grief, but that's not the true essence of the human reality.
Yeah. You know, IFS, there's the concept yes. of polarization. There are polarized parts, and how do we heal those parts is like we be with each part, and then at the end we bring the two polarized parts together and introduce them, create a connection, and then we can like slowly come back to the center, like mm-hmm. from the pendulum.
Yeah, two conflicting parts. And when you say polarization, yeah, the two of you, I love listening to the two of you talk. And this is something that I had shared with you in Estonia, that the two of you just, the way you work off of each other is really fun. Facilitating psychedelic experiences as a couple with your partner is a really unique dynamic. I've seen it a few times. I've also seen it, you know, have issue, you know, challenges, its own unique challenges and its own unique enhancements. So mm-hmm. I'm wondering if the two of you could share some of the insights into how this partnership has influenced the facilitation process for the participants.
This is a profound one. Recently, we participated in an Iboga ceremony. We talked mm-hmm. about this with you in Estonia, right? Mm-hmm. And what that facilitator shared with us is that it's particularly good at helping you see patterns. And when you do it in relationship, not only are you seeing your own patterns, you're seeing the patterns in relationship, right? Mm-hmm. The give and take of our parts, triggering each other, et cetera. What's been beautiful, and this kind of goes all the way back to the first question that you asked, when we do this together and in this path of service, we are also a work in progress. We're also healing ourselves, right? Yeah. For example, our journey right now, we're on our 14th journey, or we're about to do our 15th journey in the past year. It looks remarkably different than the first three. Mm. And that comes from us integrating more into our own lives, right? Mm. Yeah. And so there's this gift in IFS, Dick Schwartz calls it the tormentor, right? Torment, mentor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I would say I would start with, you know, I think the partner facilitate in medicine space or just a workshop, there's a beautiful polarity of the masculine and the feminine that brings a lot of like gifts and different energy. And mm-hmm. I feel that alone is very powerful and beautiful. Like I would, if I look for a container to join, I often would look for there's masculine and there's feminine, because that's just fuller and what I'm looking for. And I think what Austin trying to share is like, because we are committed to service, we're committed to truth, therefore and we have a really committed partnership, which, you know, provides a lot of safety for our shadow to come out. And then this, in this dance of the masculine and feminine, that we're, you know, we often challenged, and our approach is like we always open and reveal, you know, if there's any disagreement, and reveal our process using that to model all the tools that we're actually teaching. And a lot of participants have shared that, you know, not only the medicine, but just watching us how we navigate our disagreements and the moments of like challenges is the best medicine. And they are received, they often feel like intrigued. Okay, this is how you handle things when things are difficult. And that's how you bring your back with a deeper connection, deeper commitment. And the beginning is very vulnerable, but then mm-hmm. I see more and more teachers modeling that way. They're just like, yes, this is life. This is what is true. No couple have everything figured out, but you know, we always choose what we know to bring us back to the truth and to love. And that not only provide, you know, insights what's possible for people who come, but also for us is a tremendous accelerator growth
It's
service.
Yeah, it's very, those are the teachers that I enjoy the most, the ones who are humble and human, who are able to recognize their own parts and where they're at in their own evolution while still holding the space for others to do that work as well. The awareness is so key for that. Mm-hmm. And being partners, both in love and work, sometimes that can blur the boundaries. How do you both establish clear roles? Roles in being able to hold the space for this facilitation, this work, as well as have the balance between this work and your relationship.
I think Chuchu spoke to it really well. This masculine feminine dynamic.
And what does that mean? Yeah, because it's a complex concept.
Yeah.
Glad you asked. And what's interesting about me saying this is in the past, I was like, I really hated those words. I hated words like vibration and whatnot. But I find those words to be really useful to communicate something that I think is very easily understandable in the populace, right? The masculine energy that I am more comfortable embodying is one of leadership, of structure, of timing, of organization, et cetera. And maybe I'll let Chuchu speak to, what the feminine energy is for her.
I think the feminine energy is like a soft, gentle, like very compassionate, and like you, to ensure everyone feel held and loved, and also like beauty of the space,
creative
beauty of the experience. And yeah, and I feel like Austin, in our case, like Austin is really good at communicating process, structure, and like lead and giving people the tools and the map. And I'm really good at like being very compassionate with people's experience and create a connection from heart to heart that is providing a lot of safety. And I just think about, I just went to a Tantra training, which I received perfect transmission, but there's one woman holding another 20 women. So there's no masculine energy. And I was so triggered because we're always late and people always cross talking, and then we never finish the content that we were supposed to learn. I was like, oh my God, that's why I need a masculine in the container.
Yeah, it's, where this is really emblematic is in our ceremonies, because Chuchu and I host the ceremonies together, and we have this beautiful dynamic flow where the masculine energy to me represents power, right? Uh-huh. So there's this gong that you see in the background here. It's like, okay, this is a masculine energy of boom, we're gonna invoke that inner power for you to be courageous and confident, right? And then Chuchu will sing and play and singing bowls and it's like this nurturing, loving, gentle, I'm gonna hold you kind of energy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you say masculine reminds me of power, it slightly triggers me a little bit, because feminine is all power too. But what you're saying is like the protection, the groundedness, whereas the feminine is the flowy, the lightness, the softness, the beauty of.
Yeah, maybe instead of power, it's like courage,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, yeah. And I would say, from my perspective, this all gets really blurred in with gender roles as well, and you two just happen to embody that gender of masculine and feminine. And I look back at the way that I facilitate, and one of the feedback I get from people who co-facilitate with me is that it's so easy to work with you because you come in with the structure and you come with the organization. You're so good at running everybody, but I'm also so soft and feminine. And as I'm listening to you talk, there's also just, we have these parts inside of us, but how are we consciously embodying? How are we consciously transitioning? And mm-hmm. every time before I step into facilitator role, I pause, I tune in, I touch myself, I breathe, and I just soften everything. So it's like, to also remember how we hold all of these as well. But the two of you, because you're two individuals, can hold solidly these soul roles. And so that there's this dance between the two of you.
Yeah.
I love that practice for you. And where I'm reminded is my intention, one of my big intentions right now, just in my own human life, is to be more in my feminine or more in energy, right? Mm-hmm. I think there's just a natural there's an organic easefulness in which I settle into one energy or another. Mm-hmm. And the biggest intention of my life right now is ease, right? Yeah. Which to me means surrender and non-resistance. Mm-hmm. And so when we are together and in this container together, I think for me, I settle into that masculine role with greater ease, knowing that ChuChu is holding that feminine role with ease.
Yeah, be vulnerable. To be very vulnerable is like, you know, I'm trained to drive for achievement, does all the masculine traits. So when we started this, I have a lot of trouble of like really surrendering to my femininity. I got into power struggle, and then I realize and keep coming back to know, you know, what is my strength, what is his strength. And this is such a beautiful opportunity and process for us. You know, we both have, each of us have both of the masculine and feminine traits, but like to be a team, to provide a container that provides most possibility and potential for people's experience, like how do we learn from each other and also surrender to each other's strengths to provide the best possibility for the group is always my orientation. Like sometimes yeah. I got into disagreement with Austin, and then I was just like, you know, is this for me to feel more powerful, or mm-hmm. this will bring a better experience for the group? And that really helps.
Yeah. Yeah. So taking time to, again, be in a reflective, ask our own selves these questions, be present with our own answers and what arises there. Yeah. Thank you guys so much. This was a great conversation and one that I think everybody needs to hear, because there's curiosity and there's a lot of activity that's happening, and it empowers people to ask those questions for themselves for right facilitation. So, or right facilitation for them. Right. Yeah.
I really deeply appreciate all the questions you asked. And I've heard you talk about a lot of the beautiful answers. And so thank you for listening to us. And I miss you.
Aww. So how can
for us both experience each other's facilitation?
Me too, darling. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. And to dance and play again.
Yeah.
Where can people find more about you, Ceremonia, and all the work that you do?
Mm-hmm. Our website is ceremoniacircle.org. So that's ceremoniacircle.org. And that's also our Instagram, Ceremonia Circle. Mm-hmm. ChuChu is on Instagram as well.
ChuChu with love.
ChuChu mm-hmm. with love. And I'm Austin Mao, AustinMao. Mm-hmm. We host journeys monthly. They're 8-week programs mm-hmm. with 2 weeks online prep, 5-day retreat, 5 weeks integration in community.
Yeah. And every month we have a 5-day journey, either with psilocybin, or every 3 months we have one with ayahuasca. We also have a monthly kind of like a discovery open journey for people who are curious. And that's like a weekend program with one ceremony.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. with online stuff, we give it for free.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you, guys. This is amazing. I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See you.
Well, that was fun. Thanks for tuning in, lovers. And if you want to experience more ecstasy and sexual liberation, head over to sexlovepsychedelics.com and learn about how you can join me for any one of my online or live events. And while you're there, grab my free guide on sex and psychedelics. Remember, this podcast is for entertainment and educational purposes only. Please contact your healthcare provider and local law before pursuing any of the products or psychedelics discussed. And one final note here. I make this show specifically for you. If you're loving the show, then be sure to leave me a review in iTunes or Spotify to let me know. Happy to be here and happy to serve. I'll see you next time on Sex, Love, Psychedelics.